Good afternoon, you're listening to Scariff Bay Community Radio, and we have local media this week. The programme where we have a look at the local print media here in County Clare, and we have Clare Champions and Clare Echoes in front of us, and we'll let you know what they're talking about this week. Great to have a full table today. John S. Kelly, John, you're welcome.
Well, thank you, Jim.
And we've Pat O'Brien. Pat, good to see you.
Thanks, Jim.
And we have David Fleming. You're welcome again, David.
Thank you, Jim, and happy Easter to you.
Indeed, thank you
very
much.
And to all our listeners.
And could we send a very special to Mairead, to Pat's wife, and wish her a very speedy recovery.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, thanks, John. She's recovering the way anyway. She's improving.
Good. Ruth Griffin Photography is our sponsor, and we thank Ruth very much for our sponsorship. I'm looking here at Google, and I see armadillos are the only living mammals that wear such shells. Closely related to anteaters and sloths, armadillos generally have a pointy or shovel-shaped snout and small eyes. David, why would the County Council spend €137,000 of your money on armadillos?
It's a very good question. we are, of course, not referring to the animal, because that would be a scandal altogether. But nearly as big a scandal is what they are spending it on. These armadillos are objects used on roads to divide lanes and make a division. Here, in this case, they're dividing a road between cars and cyclists, so that a cycle lane is created. And what they are is small bumps that look, to all intents and purposes, like an armadillo, and hence their name. I wonder if they have an official name, but anyway, McMahon is calling them armadillos.
When I drive over one, now what am I going to experience?
You're going to experience a bump anyway. You'll know that you certainly like they're very hard.
Are they doing the job? Do they really function?
Well, I don't think cyclists like it very much, because a car can go over them pretty easily. And if you're there in the lane, a better job, and I've seen it in other places, other cities, is a curb. A curb dividing the road from the cycle lane. But in any event, it seems that €137,000 has been spent on the controversial bollards and armadillos in Ennis. They were introduced in 2019 as part of a new cycling scheme, according to Pádraig, and exclusive of VAT. So you have to add the VAT on even. €137,000 spent on them, and they're considered not very useful. There was no need of them at all. We have no problem with a cycle lane, but all the paraphernalia there was no need for it, former Mayor of Ennis Tommy Brennan told the Clare Echo.
Yeah.
So, they're not universally popular.
Not universally popular. I don't think, as I said, I don't think cyclists even find them that safe.
The area in question is just the road over by St. Helens College.
College Road.
They have narrowed down the road very much, and the two cycle lanes at both sides are nearly as wide as what they have for the cars. If they had put a curb along at both sides in a bit and give a bit more space there to cars, I don't think there'd be a problem with it.
There's a picture there on page 6 of the Echo, and I was cycling there now. I wouldn't find myself very safe, I'd have to say, by looking at them. But of course, it's the way engineers tend to engineer these things, unfortunately. But if you go to Amsterdam, where of course they know a thing or two about cycling, you won't see that sort of thing.
Well, they're going to remove all these anyway. These are going to be all removed according to the council.
They're going to remove them?
Remove them, yeah.
After being put there?
After being put there, yeah.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on it anyway. Maybe be removed to the zoo. Okay, also on the first page one of the Clare Echo, they talk about there's an article by Pádraig on the Oatfield Wind Farm, and there's 191 submissions on the Oatfield Wind Farm. Orsted is the company that plans to construct 11 wind turbines. And actually this week we feature one of the Pat, you and I were in Glore recently at the Liberal Forum on energy, and there was a representative from Ørsted there, and they'd be obviously interested in wind energy as well. But 191 submissions. I imagine that most of them were probably negative.
Yeah, I'd say the majority of them are probably negative. Yeah, they appear to be very high, and I think a lot of the submissions there, I was just reading there earlier on today, Timmy Dooley in his submission stated the proposed turbines are absolutely incredible in size for such a rural setting. In my travels as a public representative, I've seen wind developments with turbines of this scale, but they tend to be in location in remote, unpopulated areas. East Clare is not such a location, and the proposed size is wholly unsuitable from a visual and environmental viewpoint. And I think Carl Crowe has similar visually obstructive, you know, he expects his belief that the planning conditions of Steve Kellen were not properly monitored and enforced. So,
You weren't an objector yourself, Pat?
No.
I know, John, when we had Timmy in Saturday Chronicle, one of the points he was making was that a lot of the sort of the so-called low-hanging fruit in terms of windmills were already picked. So the more remote areas where objections wouldn't be that numerous, but now we say we're left for onshore wind turbines.
And Umber Planol are making money, by the way, out of the objections. You'll be delighted to hear that.
Well, of course, now...
I'm speaking to David.
Some people would say you should put up the cost of objecting to prevent certain... Do you see, this is where the ball is.
Jim favours that.
Yeah, don't you? Jim?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but it only costs €50, by the way.
Returnable if the objection is upheld.
All right. €50, and they're after making, in order to process all these applications, I presume that's what the fees are for, €9,550. Opposition to the project was flagged by the Board of Trustees of Sunyata Buddhist Centre and the 12 O'Clock Hills and Recreational Project. Fáil Ceann Ireland, Shannon Airport Authority, Air Nav Ireland and the Irish Aviation Authority Development also objected. So it's pretty substantial range of objectors. So Umber Planol has certainly got their work cut out for them to review all of those.
Yeah. And we'll be complaining.
It seems like with that level of objections, now if the objections are fairly solid, I mean, Umber Planol probably won't... The scenic value is one thing, but it's pretty minor, I suspect. But if the Irish Aviation Authority are sort of saying these are going to upset aviation, then I'd say Umber Planol will have easy grounds to turn them down.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they have to be proper objections.
Proper objections. You can't just say, I don't like them.
Mm. Mm.
Okay. Yes,
I'm just wondering, how about people making submissions, objections, under wrong name? There's an apology here in the front page.
I think what has happened, this is, I think you're referring there to Theresa and Patrick O'Connell.
Yes.
Who were listed as, whose dwelling was listed as some sort of an associate, having some sort of an association with the company Ørsted.
Yeah.
But it appears that they were incorrectly stated, that this was part of their... this is incorrect, they've said. We have not given any consent for our land to be used for delivery, access routes, turbines, connection cables, or any other compound of this wind farm development. So that's fairly damning if the company has used them and got it wrong.
Yeah, and Angus O'Brien there has said, as a principal of Bradford and Kilbane National School, Angus O'Brien expressed his worry on the impact of flicker and noise on their students' population. There are 138 students and 17 staff at the primary school, which has 7 mainstream classrooms and 1 special class for children with autism. In response to my concerns last month, I sought area students from Ostend that the flicker and noise generated by the proposed wind farm would not impact children in my school. The response I received from the portfolio department manager was wholly unsatisfactory. He's not happy with it either.
Okay. All right, we move on. The Front of the Care Champion, their main article this week is by Andrew Hamilton. And it's the heading, "I shouldn't have to fight this hard to get justice."
What was that case about, Jim?
Yeah, an Ennis Diamond woman, Emer O'Loughlin, and say their lives, or the families say their lives have been left in tatters for the past 20 years while Emer's killer remains on the run. And I suppose, John, you know, to lose someone in those circumstances must be absolutely horrific, to lose a loved one, but also to find that nobody has been convicted of a crime, of that crime, means that the person who did it is still out there,
Are you amazed at the number of fatal accidents we're having currently on the roadway? I mean, does it, as a citizen with family, does it worry you?
This wasn't an accident.
I know it wasn't.
This was murder, but yeah, I mean, to lose someone in any circumstances, and we've had a number of high-profile accidents.
There's a photograph in today's paper
last week
of a mother and her
two daughters,
isn't it? Two or three?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two daughters.
God.
It was in County Mayo.
And unfortunately, as we're this particular bank holiday weekends are times when accidents like this have happened, and I think the guards and others have already issued reminders that of the very same thing, and to bear that in mind.
Apropos that, David, are you in any way concerned about the issue?
Oh yeah, well,
on a daily basis, the Gardaí are appealing for constraint. Isn't that right?
Well, the message isn't getting through.
And why isn't it? There must be some reason.
Well, I was coming home from Limerick last night. I was coming home from Cork during the week. And this side of Bridgetown, between Bridgetown and Killaloe, I was driving along. And there was a line of cars. And this big, what do you call those big...
Articulated?
No, trunk cars. They're supersized cars.
Yeah.
It came flying out behind me and passed about five or six cars going at incredible speed. Do you know, and I just thought, anything to go wrong, and there could be fatality.
Yeah.
I mean, they were just absolutely flying it on 80 mile an hour roads.
Do you have any feeling about the proposed extension of the opening hours?
Yeah, well, in 2023, 184 people I'm just looking at the figures here. Back in 2000, it was 415. Do you know, so...
Three times.
I mean...
And what is it now?
We seem to have made improvements. It was 184 this
last
year. But it's
last
too
year.
Many, you know. It's too many, 155 the year before, 130 the year before that. So basically, since...
It's been climbing up again, yeah.
It's climbing up.
Yeah, the trend is going in the wrong way. Yeah. But certainly...
There's a kind an awful lot of young people involved in crashes. And I think there was a young fellow in Roscommon killed during the week, a 20-year-old, in his 20s.
Where was
that? One vehicle accident.
Yeah.
In 1972, John, just, you know, when... I did the leaving cert, 640 people died on the road.
That's enormous.
In 1972.
Now, I think one of the big changes since then is the wearing of seatbelts. When I was a child, my father and mother never wore seatbelts, and as a result, we never wore seatbelts. Now, the law had just come in, I think, or I don't know when the law about seatbelts came in, but it was certainly being enforced in the 1980s.
Yeah.
And very soon, my parents started wearing their seatbelts, and we began to wear seatbelts. So that statistic of 640 is not...
Yeah, and the roads have improved as well. The road network has improved around the country.
And drink driving. Let's bear that in mind.
And where does the question then...
But I'll tell you...
The question of the extension to the licensing hours. That's proposed. Look, what are they doing?
Well, that's going to cause health issues, and it's going to cause more accidents in the road. Because, you know, you have to.
The only thing, I'm just to put the other point of view, you know, if you get rid of closing time altogether and let premises close whenever they're open,
whenever they want to,
you are spreading out the times. Everybody comes out at the one time at the moment. That's one argument.
Yeah.
You know, and they're rushing drink maybe to get out at a certain because they have to leave. I think it's speed rather than.
I think it is speed. I think it could be drugs is as much of an issue now as drink. Yeah. Some people, I'd say, still take a chance with drinking. By the way, we have that. We have on page 3 of the paper, you will see more and more pubs closing their doors. And that's the chair of Clare Vintners Federation of Ireland, Charlie O'Mara of O'Day's Bar in Ennis, is angry over Diageo's latest price increase. And he says, you know, several pubs have already closed. And I think they'll continue to close, no matter if Diageo is raising their prices or not, because I think the culture is changing. And that's why, Jim, if they change the licensing laws, I don't think it'll make much of a difference anyway. Because I think the problem is a lot of the young people that I would know drink at home. They don't go out, they don't go to the pubs at all. Now, it's a little bit different, I think, in the cities, but and compared to the smaller towns, where I think young people still might go to the pub. But I think we're in a different world now, and I think we'll probably. The pub is going to become a rarity.
A rarity. Would that be a cultural loss?
Change. We won't certainly see the end of them, but we certainly won't see the numbers that we have had in the past.
When you had about, when I came here first, 23, I think, public houses in Scarra.
Yes.
Jim,
yeah.
Were you a frequenter?
No, well, I was too young, John. But, just, you know, having been in a few other places around Europe at different times, I mean, the whole pub culture that we have known here doesn't exist at all there.
No.
And, I mean, you have bars. I remember one time we were involved with a Spanish school, and in the evening we went to a pub. And four of us sat around the table and we had like a half pint of beer. And I was kind of wondering, when are we going up for the next round? But there was no next round. That was it. We sat around and we talked and chatted. Yeah. And somebody had a glass of wine. I had a half pint of beer. I was thinking if we were back in Scariff, you know, when you'd get the half pint, you'd drink it and order another one.
You'd have 4 or 5 pints drink when you were drinking the half pint.
You would in any pub in Scariff or in East Clare, you would have several.
Well, I suppose Charlie O'Mara says here, when I grew up in Clarecastle, there were 5 pubs originally, now it's down to 2. Tullagh had 13, I think going back, Tullagh had 15 at one stage, and now it's down to. Down to 3.
So,
I suppose Scariff is probably similar. There was a lot of pubs in
Scariff. There were moves there some years ago to have cafe bars where you could have wine or coffee or whatever, and you'd sit at tables.
Yes, I think that's a good idea.
That was resisted though by the vendors.
Sure.
And they are a very powerful lobby.
Well, I think that has been the case, John. Yeah. But they're no longer any. They're because the numbers are so small. They're no longer very powerful at all. And they can't even get Diageo to control the price. Well, I shouldn't say control the price, but they're complaining about the people supplying the drink now. So I think we're now in a very different culture. And for pubs to survive, we're in a transition. For pubs to survive, I think what will happen here is probably the way the English pubs went, food. The pubs in England embraced food. You go in. You have your meal, you might have a few pints as well. You see people drinking at the bar. That's the way forward, I think, probably.
And there's no, you don't think there's any room for the kind of, the guy goes in, likes the pub, because in fact, there is no food available, likes the quaintness, the...
But you see, John...
The history of it. And
a publican won't make a profit out of one or two fellas like that.
Indeed.
Plus, they have to have some way of getting home.
Yes.
Which has been another, you know, the smoking ban and the drink driving ban really has hit, particularly rural pubs.
And you pay rates then. You pay rates in a pub, and if you have no, but you pay rates every year, but you have no customers.
Yeah.
Of course, we have a publican here.
We have
a retired publican.
No, you pay the rates every year, even irrespective of whether you make here, Bob, or not.
And that the rates have nothing to do with your income.
Nothing. No. No.
But like he's complaining, Mr. O'Mara is complaining about the price of a pint. Surely Diageo's costs have gone up as well, like everybody else's.
Yes.
Yeah, but they make substantial profits every year.
But over half of the money that we spend on drink goes to the government.
Goes to government.
You know, so that's another aspect. Yeah. Okay, we move on.
But just going back to that, we hope. We hope that family up in Knocklare get justice and that they'll get closure to their
and that the Gardaí find out whoever was responsible, and they're brought to justice.
Yeah, because you know it's harder than any family.
It is very tough. Yeah. Just on the hospitals again, I just see on the front page of their champion a case made for a Model 3 hospital in Ennis. Now, I must say, I wasn't aware, but I came in here today about the categorisation of hospitals.
Yeah, well, you were missing in action there last week, Jim, and we had a full discussion about this and the need.
Now we can tell him again.
We'll tell him again, and just to remind our listeners, I think the hospital in Limerick, UHL, is a Model 4, which is top of the range. Mm. And every Model 4 hospital in the hospital district would normally have a Model 3, which is a sort of a step down, and that would include another emergency department, or would have an emergency department. The district which serves University Hospital Limerick, which of course covers County Clare, Limerick, a bit of Tipperary, most of Tipperary, doesn't have a Model 3 hospital. And so a local hospital lobby group, according to Dan Danaher, has presented the case, a case for a Model 3 hospital in Ennis to senior HSE officials. And the senior HSE official, they were meeting the HSE West Forum. I've never heard of anything. This must be the consultative forum for the West. But anyway, the Councillor Seamus Morris called for an independent investigation into why the reconfiguration of acute hospital. This is an interesting one now, because we've often spoken about this. He called for an investigation into why the reconfiguration of acute hospital services in 2009 took place before the necessary additional capacity was provided. He said that the HSE promised 600 acute beds once the population reached 350,000, right? I'll repeat that. 600 beds for 350,000. At the moment, 15 years later, we have only 530 beds and our population is 425,000. You know, nearly 100,000 more.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is what we've always said, our population has...
So we should have about 750 beds.
We should have about 750, and we only have 530.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, now, I
So the answer?
Know, well, they need more beds. They
but
need
I think
more beds. And
they
do
were
they
told,
need, do
were
they
told
need,
that at the time.
They were told that at the time, you see. And they said it themselves, sure. The HSE said themselves that they should have 600 beds if the population is 350,000. And this is why it's very good that Councillor Morris is holding them to account in this regard. We heard this week as well that GPs are to man the entrance to University Hospital Limerick to, in effect, turn people away who are not seriously ill and to go elsewhere. So that's quite a novel approach. We do know that the doctors and nurses complain that people are using the accident emergency who are not at all.
And the injury unit in Innes is to be extended to 24 hours as well.
Is that confirmed?
They were to do it in the right direction. Yeah.
But I.
Now I think there should be somebody in the A&E checking out people, because I was in the A&E 3 months ago, And there was fellows there around, and they were drunk, and they were, yeah. and drunk, they were druggies, and they were, and they were, to tell you the truth, they were just a nuisance to the people that was trying to do a bit of work. Yeah. I had sympathy for the people that was trying to look after them, look after people anyway.
And people triaged when they come in.
Yes.
Why can't the nurse doing the triage send them away? Why do we need GPs? Maybe it's an insurance thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe you do need a doctor to actually say, go away.
But I suppose after a certain time in the day, all the GPs are closed. I mean, presumably GPs generally close at
5 o'clock.
Well, I'm curious as to where they're going to get the GPs from.
And you're right. You're rightly. You know, the ideas that come up as solutions keep coming back to the basic point of pay them.
Yeah, pay them and shortages.
Yeah.
Okay, we move on. I'm just looking at a couple of things.
Yes.
Page 16 in the Clare Echo, the Italian job, how the movie industry brought Enzo to Ennis. And Enzo, he's Enzo da Auria, and apparently he came to Ennis, and we're all familiar with the Enzo's in Ennis, the chip shops or fast food outlets. Enzo's now 81, and he came to Ennis during the making of a movie. And it's funny, when I arrived in St. Flannan's as a student, literally, this movie had just wrapped up, but everyone was talking about it. Guns in the Heather.
Guns in the Heather.
And it was a lot of some of the movie was made in the college, but Enzo anyway came.
Did you figure in the movie?
Oh yeah, well some of them didn't know. I said it was just finished when I arrived.
Yes,
a few months before I came. But yes, a lot of the students
made a few bob.
I suppose they did. I never asked them that, but they had big parts and. You know, background parts and that kind of thing. But it's a nice story. It's all of page 16. Stuart Holly has it there. About
he was cooking for this cast. I think that's what he's saying here. He's now 81. He looks pretty fresh for 81. Mm. Of course, the Italians do have a way about that. But is he related to the Enzo's in Limerick? There's an Enzo's fast food in Limerick as well.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I'd imagine,
same.
Of course, he found love in Ennis as well.
Nula.
Is that the end of the...
So they're all living happily ever after?
Yeah, for years to come, Enzo would cook for A-listers and some of the most widely known films in the world, including Fiddler on the Roof, Ryan Charger, The Catholic Men, The Original Black Beauty, The Macintosh Men, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, The Sound of Music, Mary Poppins, Dr. Zhivago, and The Wicker Man. So he's
cooked for them all.
He's cooked for them all.
Yeah.
Okay. Just, I suppose, before we reach the halfway point, and we're nearly there, I see the track, you know, from Ennis to Limerick is, at Newmarket, is underwater again.
Yeah,
and that's featured in some of the papers today.
There's a big story on the, and the Champion Gym this week on it.
I wonder, you know,
it's page 8 of the Champion.
Yeah.
Again,
and something happens every year.
Something we discussed this again last week.
Yes,
and there was a photograph from 2006 or 2008. We've improved this week in that it appears that the photograph is 2020. We would like our journalists, and our photojournalists in particular, and John Kelly is noted for his photography, to get a more recent... We'd like to see the track now.
Now, as it is this
year. Yeah, we're not interested... We know what it was like in 2020. We'd like a more recent photograph, please. But it is indicative. You can just see the railway line. I'm just curious. Will the train not get past that?
Mr. Patrick O'Donovan is the OPW...
Junior Minister.
Now, he has a load of stuff written here, answers, questions that was put to him, answered them. They're throwing them, they're kicking the ball down the road to different departments, have read into this. Yeah. There's different departments, and they're all blaming each other.
They're passing the book.
Now, if this track was out in Mr. O'Donovan's constituency. I'd say the water would move us with fairly quick.
Well, the hydrology of the place, I suppose, means that a flood comes and it stays.
It stays.
But
and the problem for Éireann Ó Réirne is that the advice is that the solution is not on their property. So that means there's the Department of Agriculture, there's the OPW, there's a few other agencies and departments involved. It's a bit like the Bunratty thing.
They could raise the track.
They have
it
done
won't
it.
Won't solve the problem, you see.
They have done it already.
They've already. They could build a stilted bridge, which might solve it. Yes. But it's just going to keep happening.
But you have Eamon Ryan coming out with all these. He's going to charge, you know, to drive into the city centre in Galway or Limerick or anything else. You're going to be charged extra. Yes. You're going to be charged extra for parking your car in the car parks, if you can find a car park.
Yes.
So they want people to travel on trains and buses, and then you have this thing, and he's, John Kelly was travelling on this line 70 years ago, and it was...
It was flooded in.
Yes, so no one has learned.
No.
Okay, Pat. I think we're frustrated and angry, and with everything that's happening. So we need a bit of music, something, a bit of life relief to entertain us, Pat.
Jim, we were talking there about armadillos early on. So we have Tony Christie. Is this the way to Armadillo?
Oh, very good, lovely song. Okay, thank you, Pat. Very welcome back. You're listening to Local Media This Week on Scariff Bay Community Radio, sponsored by Ruth Griffin Photography. And we enjoyed Tony Christie, Is This the Way to Armadillo? Lovely to hear it again. Pat's choice at half time. So, in the second half of the show, we're looking at East Clare news. And I suppose, Pat, will we start with the elections? An announcement, maybe a kind of surprise announcement there during the week.
Yeah, Pádraig is the story here on page 8 of the Echo. Sinn Féin announced Martina Cleary has killed a Wendy election candidate. And her photograph is there, of course, she's well known for Dr. Martina Cleary, who is chairperson of the Clare Parish group. Now, I suppose she was on, I think, Clare FM the other morning, and she announced that she was standing in the Killaloe area, and I think Sinn Féin weren't happy about it. Of course, they were waiting for some
other announcement. They wanted to announce it in their own time.
In their own time, probably.
And use it, I presume, as a furthering the interests of Sinn Féin?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Pulling from... Yeah.
And then, again, I suppose the Pyrite group up in Donegal are putting up candidates as well, so I suppose maybe they mightn't be so happy as well. They might be hoping she would stand in Clare.
Do you think there is a national support for the Pyrite group?
Well, sure, there is. There's Pyrite all over the county, John. There's Pyrite in different places around the county. I don't know whether she'd get elected on that, I don't know, really. It's hard to know.
What do you think her chances are in the constituency here, the municipal district of Killaloe, where we have the five incumbents standing, and she is probably going to be one of another three, so that makes about eight, maybe?
It's difficult for someone to break into, because you hope the five fellas to stay there. Well, I suppose they're doing a good job enough, and... They're well known and all that, and it's difficult for someone maybe outside that group to break it.
She is not from the constituency, our municipal district here.
Croisine is in our district.
Oh, Croisine is in our district.
Do you think she's the second woman to introduce? Do you think the whole women thing might help? The fact that there's five men already in post. Do you think maybe women might vote for her?
It might. It might. I don't know really.
No?
I don't know. I suppose it could help a certain amount of women. Maybe there wouldn't be a line to other parties would vote
and
for.
It takes a bit of time to achieve what you're, you know, what you're saying.
Yeah, Petra Gorman there, Councillor Petra Gorman says, Pyrite, she are turning her back on the people she represents by running for Sinn Féin. So he's having the course up there over letting down the pyrite people.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Pat O'Gorman, he'd be in the, he's in the Shannon Municipal District, so he wouldn't be in her district anyway.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There's another article there, Jim, inside in the middle of the paper as well, that Moroney resigns from Fianna Fáil to run for the Independent Ireland. And that's Matthew Moroney from Bradford, some native there. Bradford native of Kildane, and he's resigned from Fianna Fáil. He stood for the Fianna Fáil at the Fianna Fáil convention.
Did we have him last week?
Last June, we? And wasn't selected, so he's resigned now, and he's joined the Independent Ireland Party to contest the election.
Do we know anything about the Independent Ireland Party or what
there? No, there's a group of independents there that have come together. I think
Michael Collins from County Cork is the leader of the Independent
there's a group of
Independent Ireland.
Collins.
Michael Collins.
Great name.
It takes a Corkman to lead a party, you see. speaking of, there's another candidate. You were saying how tough it might be for some of the local election candidates in our constituency. But there is an opening, it appears. I know we're going to West Clare now in the Kilrush electoral district, where the PJ Kelly is, of course, retiring. So that opens up possibilities. And there is a West Clare barber, but he's also a Suckler farmer, Joseph Wolfe, who's going to run. So that'll be an interesting constituency when it pans out. Yeah, when it pans out.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. Anyway, we'll be there on the 8th, and I think it's Saturday the 8th of June.
June, wherever
the count is taking
it's
place.
It's coming up fairly quick.
This is the West County, okay.
I'd be hoping, though, that the station has, we bring all of our candidates for a show. So we're discussing that at the moment to see if we can bring it up.
Before we do
the counting, we have to hear them.
And we'll certainly be very interested in hearing from all the candidates.
Joe Wolfe polled well. You know, he went elected either. He went for the general election as well.
Here in the studio.
But he polled well in the local election the last time. So he could be a threat to someone up in the West.
In Kilrush, is it?
In the Kilrush area, yeah.
Yes, okay. So that's the elections. Very interesting. And sure, read your local papers, the Clare Champion, the Clare Echo, to keep up to date with what candidates are there and what they're saying. And you will have to make up your own mind then in both the local, the European, and the Dáil election, whenever that takes place. Now, on staying with East Clare, Supermax. Supermax in Tungraney, which originally was Nylands or Gala, and that has been purchased recently by the Supermax company,
Pat McDonough.
And during the year, we're going to be able to call over and have tea or coffee or burgers or whatever we want.
Yeah, well, we might allow the Scariff people to come across the border to come to our newest facility. It's very exciting, I have to say. There was a great loss, as was pointed out in the paper on page 6, when Nylands closed there back in September, it was. It was auctioned, and Pat McDonough bought the property for €820,000, a significant amount of money. And we find out this week, 820,000.
That's a fact.
That is a fact. It's stated there in black and white, though they say you should never trust or believe anything you read in the newspapers. But I'd say that is a fact, 820,000.
Yes, it was online. The auction was online. It was closed off at 820.
And at its peak, the service station employed 22 people. And we are told here that Supermax have advertised a number of jobs. 12 in total, so roles including site operations manager, store manager, assistant manager, supervisor, catering assistant, deli manager, deli cook, deli assistant, retail and forecourt manager, and so on and so forth.
But I would imagine there'd be a number of part-time,
there'd be loads of jobs, I suspect. It's a great development, and it's good to see. Because it is a loss. We were just talking about the number of petrol stations in East Clare.
Yeah.
They're not as many as there was. So this will add further competition which is only a good thing. And of course, because Pat won't be coming to any Supermax because he doesn't do any sort of takeaways. But you can come over for a cup of coffee someday, Pat, if you'd like.
I know you're winding up to say something.
I don't eat. I actually very seldom eat burgers or anything. Any kind of fast food, but anyway. And we wish Pat McDonald the best of luck, and hopefully he'll live there.
Yeah. And I mean, we all know people who were working there. When suddenly someone arrived in and told them to go home.
Yeah.
And that was the end of their job there.
Yeah.
So let's hope that those who were working there will be able to regain employment.
Actually, I was in a business in Scariff, so then we were talking about it, and the men behind the counter said to me, to be grand if it's open again, he said, because Scariff is chock-a-block and you can't get a place to park or anything.
And that is a huge problem in Scariff now, that you can't get parking or anything. Roll on Supermax into Grange.
Yeah. By the way, roll on the regeneration.
Yes, John. We'll come to that. The regeneration project in Scariff.
Yes. Because that is addressing the parking issue, yes?
It is. It mightn't be to everyone's taste. But
when it comes to parking spaces, you'll never get a united.
No. And it's going to create extra. Now, it's taking some parking spaces from the street, and that was a cause of controversy.
Yeah.
But it's adding a lot of parking spaces down Jones's Road with the new line. So it should be, and that combined maybe with Supermax opening into Rainy will take some of the pressure off.
The application has gone in. There's a very happy, smiley Councillor Pat Hayes pictured on page 23 of the paper. So he's delighted, obviously, that it's happening or that it's about to happen. But he's not exactly happy because he says here, I'm not happy we're not doing something in the short term. Put up road markings or something to improve the connectivity, he replied. This is about the mobility and the problems that Scariff has as late because of the traffic. But because it's getting to be a serious junk. I've had a few scares now.
Did you get any scrape?
No, well, I nearly gave somebody a scrape. It's the road's enough for now. You have to watch in multiple directions depending on where you're coming from.
You do. Well, the centre area there near the market house, that is a danger.
Yeah, but Pat Bourke actually is looking for to be repainted, the roads there. And I was looking at it myself there, all the markings are gone from the road, and if the proper markings were.
Yeah, and I was looking at the condition of the street is the tarmac at them is not great now, I have to say that.
Which street are you talking about?
Coming down here to the GA pitch from the square. Hmm.
Well, I said that will be our surface when this job is done.
When they do it. But the question is when, and if, you see, if the money is going to come. He says here that he said a finalised design would be prepared by the end of 2024. So that's only the finalised design. Presumably, the work is going to happen in 2025 or 2026.
Well, one would presume that if they have applied for it, the design must be. I suppose the design will depend on where the money comes.
It's the money will pay for part of the design. Maybe.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Anyway, that's something to look forward to. Tulla, they seem to have a problem as well, Pat. That's the GA Park, which is refurbished, and
they're getting big houses.
It quite a lot.
Yeah, they're getting big houses there now, Jim. And
it's far away, or there is the connectivity with the main. Yeah, they're probably looking for Tulla isn't good enough.
They're looking for maybe a footpath down along from the cross there where you go up to Tulla. Murphy's Cross down as far as the pitch, and maybe. Some where they can cross crossing there at the pitch. I think there's also a big problem there and match days as well where parking down along at both sides of the road. And actually, I think Joe Cooney has reference to there and about that they should take out all the both sides and put a hard shoulder along at both sides of that road for to provide car parking. And actually, I said it to him. I said. No, I said I passed through it when there was big crowds there, and it's dangerous because
it is dangerous.
People come on and they'll pull halfway in on the green, and the fellow at the other side will pull halfway in the green, and there isn't room for two cars to pass out.
Yeah. Isn't the ideal solution for the GAA there in Tulla to see if they could buy a neighbouring field?
Well, they have bought a field, but they're going to put up an indoor facility in it.
Yes.
But if they both sides, you're eventually going to have probably a greenway or a cycleway in Tainus, because you have a lot of white space at both sides of the road.
But you're not going to be able to put cars there.
If that part of it, down as far as well, you turn down to O'Callaghan's Mills, which they don't.
Yeah, that's
the both sides of the road there. If there was loads of room in it, but they had them all dug up, and they had them all dug up, letting water in, and they were trying to stop them travellers from parking there.
I remember for years, we'd park exactly where Pat is referring to, from the park gate back to the mills.
Fort Ancross.
But there are a number of hidden holes there, as you said, for water. But there is space there for car parking. Yeah,
there is. Well, there's lots of space. I was on to Joe Cooney about it, and I was saying to him that they should be taken out and put in a half shoulder along the both sides. And
of course.
You could pull the car parking out.
Where are you going to put the path then?
Pardon?
The path that they're...
No, that'd be different. The path would be from the other side.
You would only have one hard shoulder for car parking, and on the other side you'd have a path.
No, the path they're talking about is from the GAA grounds up to the cross where you turn up the Tulla and up past. You know where the funeral home is.
Yeah.
They're looking for footpath along there, I'd say. Mm.
And I mean the Tulla, the improvements they've made. I mean the pitch is fabulous.
Oh, they have, yeah, fabulous.
You know,
the
new stand. It's a pleasure and great comfort to go to a match in Tulla now.
Actually, speaking of the pitches, our own pitch outside took a playing.
Last weekend the was the first game in both.
And the reports are very, very
reports
positive.
Are good. Yeah, in about 2 years.
Yeah.
Or almost 2 years since the match was played there.
Yeah.
But I didn't get to it, unfortunately, but I've heard reports that it's excellent.
Very good.
Okay, we talked, and there's loads of stuff on East Clare this week in the papers. The Greenway from Limerick to Scariff, and hopefully further on eventually. And that comes in, David.
Yeah.
Or John, I'd mind put to you.
Page 24.
Well, David knows it very well because he actually travels the route.
Well, sometimes
he's going to take his bike on the green.
Well, I'll have to take the bike now and the boat.
Yes.
Well, we've been talking about this for a long time. I think ever since we started this programme, we've been talking about this greenway.
It's page 24
of the
Clare Echo.
The green pages. Green Clare, and we find out, or we will find out, the preferred route for Scariff Greenway in May. There is going to be 40, just to remind listeners, there's going to be 43 kilometres of a greenway which will connect Limerick City to Scariff.
Do you know where it starts?
It starts
in Limerick?
It starts at the canal in Limerick and goes up past the university, and then towards Ardna Crush along the old canal route.
An independent route, is it?
Well, we don't know, you see. This is the problem. We don't know. Well, we do know that part of the route, the Limerick to Ardna Crush, we'll say.
Yeah.
Or the Limerick to Killaloe, because it's going along public lands along the old canal. And that's easy enough because it's owned by Waterways Ireland. And it's Waterways Ireland are leading this particular initiative. Where it gets tricky is with the ESB.
Yeah.
The ESB, who own Ardna Crush, not too happy with the proposals.
So on what grounds?
On the grounds that who's going to maintain the facilities and all of the rest. You know, access and danger falling into the middle the race and so on. So I'm sure they could address those issues. The more difficult route is between Killaloe and Scariff, because that is not Waterways Ireland property. There was an initial talk of going up along the lake, but that seems to have been abandoned now. because they mention here that one of the problems, one of the primary constraints encountered to date include ecological issues along the River Shannon, Partine Basin and Lough Derg, which have resulted in ruling out the use of riverbanks and shorelines along the Greenway. ESB have flagged concerns in respect to maintenance that may be required for facilities they own. They're probably their own maintenance.
Yes.
And on the R463, which I think must be the road from Killaloe to Scariff, innovative thinking, it says here, is required to deal with a cross-section of constraints along roads and existing bridges. So there's a lot, and of course there's people with private property as well. Now, Councillor Burke has highlighted that Councillor Pat Burke, Fine Gael, who tabled a motion for an update on the Greenway, is curious as to what's going to happen, and he's looking for a link to Inishkaltra, which makes a lot of sense.
Of course it does.
Brian Tracy here, who's Western Regional Manager, which you quoted again, David, he says, we are trying our best to avoid using private land, he stated. So they're doing their best not to use private land.
But you see, the problem is, if they've ruled out the lake, most of which is private land, you're going, it's all private land, sure, between Killaloe and Scariff. Mm. So, and one of their other challenges is the vertical incline between Killaloe and Scariff. Of course, the hills at Ogunnilo is a problem.
It's a problem. Okay, listen, we were nearly out of time, but I just want to have a look at page 13 of the Care Champion, because the top thing there, €500,000 on the cathedral makeover. And of course, the St. Fannan's Cathedral in Killaloe is one of the jewels in the crown of East Clare. Just such a, it's living history, really, and it goes back so many centuries. So, Pat, €500,000 that's spent on it there.
Yeah, it's on page 13 again, then there's the story. More than €500,000 has been spent on priority maintenance works at St. Fannan's Church of Ireland Cathedral in Killaloe over the last 4 years, adapting and securing a special scaffold to access the bell tower. And this unique early 13th century building costs an estimated $100,000. The Historical Structures Fund had allocated another $153,000, which would help fund some of the phased maintenance works, which are expected to start during the summer months. The new Dean of Killaloe, Reverend Canon Dr. Richard Marsh, has been struck by people who are demonstrating huge commitment and expertise to plan and drive the project on the fabric of the building and rally around to determine how this can be financed in the future. Mm. So there's a lovely photograph there of the inside of the bell tower.
And the bells can be played, of course, in a
photograph by John Kelly. Look at this marvellous, and we wish them the best of luck with their endeavours. Yeah. It's a beautiful building.
Yeah. They're planning a fundraising concert in May, so that's good. I actually know the architects who are pictured there. They're conservation architects, Ailish and Drake and Conor Hurrigan. So people would have seen the lime rendering, the lime pointing of the tower over the last year, which is the whole problem with the building is that it was maintaining its moisture because it was pointed at some point in concrete. And if you went inside the cathedral, you would have seen a lot of green mould on the inside of the walls. The walls were effectively oozing moisture because it couldn't escape.
Yeah.
So they've had to do a big job in taking all of that down.
That's been corrected.
Well, this is where the money will be going for now. But the tower, I think, is corrected.
Okay.
The greatest problem is, when we quote this, the greatest problem we have is rain. The Irish climate is going to get wetter,
rain.
He said.
It's a problem we all have.
If it gets much wetter, I think we'll be washed away.
Listen, there's a number of items here. Councillors called for upgrade to Kilkishan treatment plant. I know we've done that before. Two people from East Clare. We'll all remember the day over in Tungrani where Michael Blake was was involved in bringing the Aga Khan Trophy. Well, they had a major win in Florida, I think it was Florida.
In the States.
And I mean, it's so brilliant to see a local man, you know, getting those kind of honours. But it's on page 18
in the sports page
of the Clare Champion in the sports section. And Rachel Akers
is also on page 13
in the living section now we're talking about. And she's there with her dad and her husband. And she did very well in Europe.
Well, I think she did more than well, Pat.
She won three gold medals.
She won three gold medals.
Yeah. And she broke her own record.
Well, she set a new Irish record, if you don't mind, for the discus. She also won the hammer throw and set another Irish record. And she completed her week's competition in the weight throw. I don't know what exactly the weight throw is, John.
It's a bit like, I think it's a playoff of what was the old half 100 weight, do you remember?
Yeah, you throw it out for you.
Yes.
Okay, listen, we've run out of time. Many thanks to all our contributors today. John S., thank you so much.
Okay,
John. And Pat.
Thanks, Jim.
And David.
Don't eat too many Easter eggs now, Jim.
We try not to. Pat, have you something to play us out with?
I have, Jim. We'll just wish the Clare team the best of luck against the Cats next Saturday evening. By the time we'll be on again, it'll be over. So hopefully we'll tame the Cats.
Hopefully. Skin them even.
So, we'll go back as to Easter time. Kilkishan Naki, we'll have to remember it on Easter Sunday night. So, we have Brendan Meyer and the Ryle Show went with the Huckle Book.
Very good. Excellent. Okay, thank you so much for listening to us. We'll see you again, we'll talk to you again next week at 2 o'clock on next Sunday. From us, for now, God bless. Bye-bye.